God.
God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one. We've divided it into two parts. Tonight, we're on part two, the mental obsession. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Jamie from Cornerstone and Mark from Candlelight. I will read the first paragraph on page five, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Page five, I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed, and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day, I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did.
I'm Jamie Joy. I'm an alcoholic.
Jamie.
So this is the first time that I've spoken in a meeting since 2015. I have a home group. It's Cornerstone. It meets 7 o'clock on Saturday nights, right down the street. I have a position in that service group. I have a position at the district level. I try to take meetings in the treatment centers. I have a sponsor. I've worked the steps with that sponsor. I sponsor, and I'm currently working the steps with that sponsee. So this had to be stopped. Spoke to me because 100% every time I said that, that's it. This is enough. This is going to be it. I 100% at the bottom level of my soul, I thought that That's what I meant, and that it was true. And I would end up drinking or drugging it every time. so I had a lot of years. I had about 20 years in another program. And I had just celebrated 20 years, and it was just like a few weeks after that. And I had just gotten a master's degree from the Defense College. And everything, you would think my life was perfect, and I was miserable. And I had been struggling for a long time internally. I was doing all the right things. I was making sure that my, you know, I was helping people. I was going to meetings. I was doing everything that I thought that I should be doing, but I was not happy. so I went home after a meeting one night. It was a Friday night, and the thought just popped into my head. And I was at the liquor store within 5 minutes, and I had a drink in my body after 20 years. And there was no fight. That thought came, and I acted on it, and it was immediate, and it was natural as breathing. And you know, I thought, because I was doing all those things, you know, I was doing what the program teaches me. I was going to meetings, and I was doing all this stuff. Like, I had 20 years, you know, and I deserve to have a husband. I deserve to have all these things. And because I wasn't getting the things that I thought I wanted or that I needed or whatever the case was, I was becoming very angry. And it was just a matter of time before I picked up that drink. But it was, but my program today is a lot different than that program. And, you know, and I was just trying to control everything. You know, I was busting my ass trying to make life work. And no matter what I did, I was still unhappy and unsuccessful internally, even though everything on the outside was just wonderful looking. You would think I'd have the life of Riley, and I was not happy. And I relapsed. That's it.
Well, thank you. My name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
Right. That first sentence, I woke up. It just strikes me strange because I never woke up. Anyway, I came to a lot, but I never woke up. My name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 24, 2015. My home group is Candlelight, meets Friday night, 8 p.m., right up the street there, 1301 Collie Avenue. I have a service position in my home group. I have a service position at district level. I sponsor people. I have a sponsor. And I came to a lot. And then my next thought was not, well, it was sort of this had to be stopped, but it wasn't the drinking. It was the consequences that followed after coming to the vomiting and the hangover, the headache, and all that stuff had to be stopped. But, you know, the drinking, no. My thought was, how do I, you know, not get to this point? The coming to part, the blackout was cool. I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. But the coming to and having to, you know, do all the things that follow after that, that was what I wanted to be rid of, right? And so drink properly, switch my drink, you know, make sure I hydrate good before I go to bed, you know, but it was, and none of it ever worked, right? And a lot of the stuff I'm reading here is kind of backwards to me, because I never wanted to quit drinking until after I got into fellowship, mm. You know, until after I, and when I went into rehab, it wasn't, you know, to quit drinking. It was I needed a break, right? And if I had to do something about my drinking, I might look into it, but it wasn't necessarily quit drinking, right? So I look at this stuff from a backwards position, you know. How do I, I never wrote sweet promises or promised anybody I wasn't going to drink anymore. It just, I would drink better. Mm. I would drink so I didn't have incidents. I managed the consequences as a result of my drinking, but never not drink. The one time third wife hid my bottle from me, you know, and I finally came to like 1 or 2 in the evening, afternoon, And first thing I did was go downstairs, look for make me a drink to start feeling better. And my bottle was missing. I know there was a little corner enough to get me a drink and start feeling better, but it wasn't there. And I looked at her, I'm like, where's my bottle? And she's like, you just can't drink today. And I said, look, you need to give me my bottle. I can go buy a new one, but it'll be quicker if you just give me my bottle, right? That was my idea. But whenever it was all renewing resolves, it was always just trying to drink better. Not better as like a normal person, better like the alcoholics I aspire to be able to drink like and with, right? I wanted to drink as much as they were drinking, as often as they were drinking, as fast as they were drinking, and still appear to be functioning normally. I mean, that was my mindset, right? And then when I was suffering the bad hangovers, it was never, I don't want to drink anymore. It's just get through this little moment and then it'll be better. I'll just take a drink. It'll be better. It was always a thought. I need a drink, right? That's all I got on that.
Okay. Thank you both. We're going to pick up on page 7 for the next reading. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge.
I got sober at 18, in Fort Lauderdale, and, I had a spiritual awakening, and I had worked the steps, and, they were more of like a kindergarten way to work the steps, but still I had worked the steps, and I did find some from relief from, and I had found God, and, you know, things were good for a while, but I went to a delinquent school that my parents paid for so that I could graduate. I had about an 8th grade education, and I had a lot of learning disabilities. And slowly but surely, I did the steps, and I slowly went back to school, and I took a bunch of classes that weren't accredited, and I chipped away, and I was able to get a bachelor's degree, and I joined the Navy, and I worked on hovercrafts, and then I was able to like manage my pocketbook, and things were starting to be somewhat manageable. And about 10 years sober, I joined the Navy, and then I ended up buying a house, and then the Navy said, no, we're going to make you a cryptologist. So I changed jobs, and I went to work for NSA, and I became a spy for the US government. And I had all these things that I had achieved. And then they went and put me in a master's program. So my will in other areas of my life, if I put my mind to it, I can do anything. But I cannot control my drinking. And I think when I reached that first step, the realization that I cannot trust myself any longer, that I am full of shit, and that I might be able to do A, B, and C, but and that's another thing. Like, that's one thing. Okay, put down a drink, but fine. But to turn my will and my life over to the care of a loving higher power, and just let things be and let things go, is a huge undertaking. And it is completely far from anything that you It's definitely a far cry from putting down liquor, right? I am the type of drinker that I have to be removed from it. I'm a drinker. I drink every single day. I have to be put into a rehab for 30 days. I have to be detoxed, and I have to physically be separated. But what happens once I am physically separated from alcohol? I still have that obsession of the mind, and that obsession of the mind manifests itself in men. And I have a story about that, but I'll wait for that. And that can, so the problem is not really about the alcohol, right? It's about me and my thinking. And so I really need to allow something that's bigger than myself to take over, because it needs to be bigger than me, because I'm a big baller. You know, I am all that and then some. And something needs to be really big and powerful in order for me to have and achieve a daily sobriety and a daily way of living that I can sit in my own skin. I just want to be able to sit in my own skin and be okay with myself and my surroundings. And I learned about these roles while going through the four step in this AA big book. And I don't need any other type of material to help me through daily living, because that is really my issue. It is not about just putting down the drink. I need a format to live my life so I don't die in a gutter. Because that's what it is for us, right? As I get myself in these jams and these life situations that I have manifested through my obsessions to become totally unmanageable, insane. And then what else do I have to do? I have to pick up a drink. And then next thing you know, it's 7 years later and I'm crawling to get back in here.
I think my will in regards to alcohol is about as strong as a bowl of Jello, right? There's no strength there. I don't think I ever made an attempt to even, you know, strongly think about something like that. I was thinking about the accident in the tunnel recently, and somebody went wrong way into the tunnel, but alcohol was involved. And I got to thinking, you know, my willpower told me, don't go to Portsmouth and drink, right? Because I had this crazy idea that if I got over there and got drunk, I was going to run into the tunnel wall and flood the tunnel, right? So I never, ever drank in Portsmouth until I drank in Portsmouth. Mm-hmm. And then it was all right to drive through that tunnel drunk as hell. And in 07, I bought a motorcycle, super bike. And I'm like, I'm never going to ride this bike drunk. So this will stop the drinking and driving stuff, right? Until I got drunk and tried to get on a bike and dropped it and then got it back up. And then it was okay to ride that bike drunk every day, right? I never had the willpower to stand by any of those kind of thoughts. There's times where, you know, I take a medicine that is detrimental to my liver. So my doctor has to check my liver twice a year. And he'd be like, are you, the results always came back high, abnormal. And he'd be like, are you drinking? And I'm like, I'm a sailor. Of course I'm drinking, right? And he's like, okay, don't drink for a little while. And then we'll recheck your liver in like 3 or 4 months and see what it looks like. Y'all know what I gave up. The medicine every time, the medicine every single time. There was a time when I was taking another medicine, was an injection. And when I first started taking it, it would put me down for like the weekend, right? But I'd take that shot and it'd be like 4 or 5 hours before it actually started making me sick. And so this was 4 or 5 hours that I could be at the bar. And so to ensure that I had the maximum amount of time at that bar, I would be in and this was Friday at Applebee's up there at Jamf. I'd be in that back parking lot with my pants down so I can inject myself in my leg to not miss that time that I could be up there drinking. I had no willpower to not drink. You know, I just didn't. And then I don't even know if that was the session part of it. I just know that I could not do it, right? And then, but, you know, in other aspects of my life, I was successful in the Navy. You know, I did 20 years in the Navy. I was successful to a point, though. There were times when I've never been a skinny person, but there were times when I was close to being within body standards. And there's more than one guy said, you know, if you stop drinking, do a little more running, you might get down on the body standards. But I could not do that, right? I could run more. I'd always run more. I'd always, you know, be sick as hell trying to get out there and do it. But, you know, the idea of just not drinking so I could accomplish that one last rank in the Navy, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. You know, there's times when I was told, your attitude, because I can be and may still be sometimes full of ego. And so I'm always right. I know how to do everything. And, you know, there were people like, if you just let us guide you sometimes, you know, instead of thinking you know everything, you know, maybe you'd be more successful. You make some friends that would help you out on that eval process. But I could never do that either. You know, screw him. I know more than him anyway. Right. But that never helped me. Right. But I'm that lucky alcoholic too, because the one time I did have an incident driving drunk, New Year's Eve of 91 or 92, did something dumb in a car and ended up in court behind that. And I got off on it. But, you know, my punishment to myself was no more drinking and driving on New Year's. You know, yeah, the idea of, you know, not drinking just was, you know, that was impossible to do. But, you know, I'll just not go out on New Year's Eve anymore. And I haven't been out on New Year's Eve since then. But, you know, yeah, you would think that, you know, I would have the common sense to go, you almost got locked up. But no, I'll punish myself in this way, but I'll never give up drinking. And I kept doing that, you know. And I think that just shows how amazingly weak I'm in respect to, you know, taking that drink, whether it's the first drink or the 15th or the 30th or the 40th, you know, it's always going to be the next. I always need more. And and when I'm not drinking, you know, that's what I'm thinking about, you know, when and where am I going to start drinking? And now coming in this fellowship is relieved me of that obsession, that idea of having to drink every day, all day long. That's all I got.
We're going to move over to page 24. For the next reading. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
So after all those years, right, of sobriety, whatever, you know, I pick up a drink, and I think because I was, you know, I was young at the time, and that's how I kind of justified it. And I was young at the time. I could drink now. I'm an adult. And then that thought, when I was sitting on that couch, it came into my head like, oh yeah, there's no one watching me. I could just go to the liquor store and get a drink. Like, it's not going to hurt me. I knew the sky wasn't going to fall. I always had that fear, that natural good fear that we should have when taking a drink or a drug. And that was no longer there. And so, like I said, I went and I got the liquor and I got drunk. And I woke up the next day and nothing had happened. And like the sky didn't fall or anything. I did panic. And about 9 months later, so, and then I stayed sober for about another 9 months after that. But I was, oh my God, the arrogance, the selfishness, the unmanageability, like people didn't like me. I wasn't nice. I was full of myself. And you know, I didn't care anymore. Like I just didn't care. And of course I ended up, you know, I relapsed. This was the real relapse. So within a week of that relapse, I knew that I was going to continue to keep drinking once I had picked up that liquor again. So I relapsed. I flew a guy from Florida up to Baltimore. We went right from the airport to downtown Baltimore. Mm-hmm. I copped. I had a needle in my arm for the first time ever within a week. Within a year, I had lost about $150,000 that I had saved 20 years for was gone. And I still lasted 7 more years drinking. And so what would it take for us to realize, what did it take for me to really realize that this is going to kill me? And it took what it took, I guess. The difference between me and a lot of other people is for some reason, God saw fit to bring me back here. And I was humble enough. I don't know how. I guess because I prayed. And I prayed to God to please help me again. And I went to rehab and I came to Norfolk and I got the help that I needed, basically. And I listened and I had a great, great sponsor, a great woman take me through the steps. And it changed my whole way of thinking. I had went to a friend's house last night and the old Jamie would have been sitting there angry that I was there with a bunch of alcoholics sober because I didn't have a husband and everybody else did. And instead I was free and I was happy and there was no reason to really be. I was there. There was, you know, I'm glad that I don't have to wake up in the morning with the shakes, feel like crap all single day, day in and day out, day after day, lying to myself, this is a great way to live. I told myself drinking, you know, hard lick vodka every single day, that this is what I wanted to do with my life. And today I don't have to live that way. And for that, I'm grateful.
I'm sitting here thinking about managing consequences still and under this suffering and humiliation, right? The first time I think I was humiliated as a result of drinking, I was probably 16 or 17. And, you know, I just, you know, drunk, I think it was like a fifth of pepper and schnapps or something like that. And I'm passed out on the hood of my car. It's a 73 Thunderbird, a big long hood windshield, legs up on the windshield, passed out on it. And somebody slapped me in the stomach to wake me up. And, you know, that incurred a lot of vomiting. And then I vaguely remember hanging over the tub while my girlfriend at the time was petting me and didn't know what to do. And my mom comes home. I vaguely remember that. And then, you know, to me, the next day, I'm up and about like nothing happened. I recently found out that I was laid on that couch for like 3 days before I got up. Why my mom didn't do anything for me or take me somewhere, I don't know. But I didn't know I was laying there that long. But you know, that's the first time. But when I got back out, it was business as usual. Get a drink and go back to doing what you're doing. And that occurred, you know, in Pascagoula, Mississippi. Yeah, I think I was on like a 60 or 70 day run, drinking from the time I got up to the time I went to bed or passed out, until, you know, my body eventually said, that's enough. We're gonna relieve ourselves right here. And you would think that, you know, maybe I would have stopped, but the next day I was right back at it. You know, there's always some, you know, incident like that. There was a time when one of my grandkids, you know, I'd been drinking probably all day that day, and he came up to me and he got close, and I'm talking to him. He's like, ooh, your breath stinks. Smell like beer. I'm like, ew, I ain't drank beer. But, you know, did I stop? No, I just, you know, stayed the hell away from them kids when they was nearby. Right. And there's so many incidents like that, that you would think that somebody, a normal person, would say, I can't keep doing this. But it was just, again, manage the consequences. It was never something's wrong with what I'm doing. Manage the consequences of what I'm doing. And it's a shame that it took me, hell, almost 30 years of where I finally decided to do something. And it's lucky that I got into that rehab, because memory started coming back to me after about, I don't know, 10 days of not drinking. I started thinking of stuff, remembering stuff. It hadn't occurred to me in a long time. And new stuff still comes to me today. But it was also during that time where I was able to, you know, start hearing other people talk about what was going on with them and what happened with them and their drinking. And it gave me a chance to sit back and finally reflect on me. I had a bunch of aha moments during that 30-some days in rehab before I left. And, you know, I realized, you know, that I can't control my drinking. I never had tried to, but even if I wanted to, I can't. I realized that I was angry, evil, miserable, and unhappy. And it took me sitting in a room listening to people laughing. In the rooms across the house, we laugh. Some of the stuff seems inappropriate to laugh at, but we laugh at stuff. And you know, I'm sitting there listening to all these people laugh, one guy in particular, but listening to all these people laugh, and I'm getting mad at them. And I'm sitting here thinking, why am I so, I went back to the rehab and wondered, why am I so mad at these people laughing? And it occurred to me, you know, I'm not happy. And then it occurred to me, I ain't been happy in a long time, decades. You know, drunk snickering at a bar or a strip bar or a pool is not laughing. And I had to learn that, because I thought I was having fun doing all that stuff. All I was doing was just filling time as I drank. That's all I was doing. Complete failure. This kind of defense keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. You know, you would think my attitude and the way I drank would prevent me from doing certain things, like, you know, getting a first wife. And when that didn't work out, right, getting a second wife. And then that didn't work out, getting a third wife. Now I'm on the fourth wife, but that was going to work out. I'm not drinking now. But, you know, it took me to do this, to get a whole new attitude, to look at me and the way I was behaving, the way I was treating people, right? Because, you know, before AI, I told you all the women were the problem. The only thing in common between them women was me, right? It was me. I was like looking at three different women in here going, they're the problem. No, the only thing in between them is me, right? And it took me to get in here and to find that stuff out. But it was in my drinking, my obsession, and my ability to want to drink at all times kept me blind to all the bad behaviors, right? Even if I thought about it as bad behaviors, just drink some more, it'll go away, right? Anyway, thanks.
Thanks, Mark.
The next reading comes from page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovering. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
All right, so this is, I'm going to share this story about a man and how I know that this is not the it's not about the drink. It's about the obsession of the mind. It's about my thinking because, you know, like I said, I came down to Norfolk and I'm doing really great, right? Like I'm doing the steps. I'm feeling it. You know, I did that 4-step. Whoa, it's like blew my mind about these roles that we play. I never realized that before. I didn't know what I didn't know. You know, I worked my program the way that I had worked it. I realized now that it was a pretty pitiful program that I had worked. But anyway, so you know, I'm doing this and the guy that I flew up to Baltimore calls me, right? Well, he hits me up, right? And so I'm like, I'm planning to go down there, right? I'm spending money. I'm going to get my hair done. I'm getting spray tans. I'm buying makeup, right? And this is going to be it. This is going to fix me. This is okay. Cause it's, we're meant to be. And you know, the Holy Spirit had came and, and now, you know, it's just, we're meant to be. So my sponsor's like, you know, are you sure? Are you going to take a drink if you go down there? Like, you don't know what this guy. Oh, no, I know. He's doing good. I know. Oh, my God. So I get down there. Guy has no teeth. Oh. All right. No teeth. All right. So he has no teeth. I'm trying not to smile. Trying not to. All right. I take
sorry.
I'm Scott, no teeth. He is not in a recovery program. He actually has a girlfriend. And this is why I'm now down there after spending flights to get there. Not only I bought the ticket in Norfolk. That flight got canceled. So I'm driving at 4 o'clock in the morning to get to Richmond to get on a flight to get to Fort Lauderdale. All this stuff, crazy stuff is stopping me from going there. I know it's not God's will, but I'm doing it anyway because I know that I've got to do this. I've got to see this through. And the whole time I'm down there, I'm hanging out with a guy with no teeth and I cannot say no. I cannot say no. I cannot get myself up from that hotel room and get to the airport and come home. I spent $4,000 total. I didn't even, and he's not like a nice person. He's a prison dude. He's from prison. So my will have me be with someone like that. Total insanity. This isn't like, will help me be with someone like that. I will miss the opportunity for a nice man with teeth that comes into my life because I will be so busy working and hanging out with this, you know, guy in Fort Lauderdale that I have no business being with, that I don't even like as a person. And so that's where my disease takes me. Sober. And thank God I learned so far. I learned my lesson, but I realized, you know, from that experience that I need to work. The only thing that I can do for my recovery is not think about it. I cannot think things through. I cannot manage my life. But what I can do is I can call another alcoholic. If I have a resentment, I want to take a 10-step. I want to write down each time I have a resentment, I want to write about it. I want to then ask God to remove whatever it is that's holding me between him, that's holding me back from his will for me, and I need to pivot and go help another alcoholic and start that kind of cycle in my life. That's the kind of healthy behavior that I want to live by. And it's all right there in the book. It gives me a daily way to live freely and without teethless men.
You kept pointing my way. I was starting to feel like the teethless guy.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
You know, I did 20 years in the Navy, right? And so from 85 to 2005. And the first 10 years of it, it was and still a large part of drinking culture, right? And so the, coming to work drunk was no big deal. Every base in 85 had one or two base clubs. And so we always had liquid lunch. And you come back from lunch and you work and then you go drinking afterwards, right? And so back then we had shore patrol running around. If you were an alcoholic kid and got drunk out in public, the police turned you over to the shore patrol, you got brought back to the base. Today, the things that I did in my Navy career, these kids are being they're being breath analyzed for stumbling coming across the quarter day. In my day, it was like, go to your rack, don't cause a problem, right? So there's no shore patrol anymore, to bring the sailors back. And so there was no real idea what a real alcoholic was, in my mind, right? To me, and even till I came to fellowship, we referred to ourselves as alcoholics or drunks. And the difference was the degree of trouble you were in, right? That's really what it came down to. And I'm not, nowadays I can't remember which one was the drunk, which one was the alcoholic, but it was just the degree of trouble you were in. Mm. And so I had no real understanding of what an alcohol was. I remember, thinking about my great uncle. He was an alcoholic, he's always reeked of it. He was always coming through his pores. He was always wrecking cars. I'm like, Uncle Joe is an alcoholic. I don't want to be like Uncle Joe. So I'll make sure, that it's not coming through my pores, just my breath for my kids to hear it smell. And so it took me to get in here in the fellowship to really get an understanding of what alcoholism is, right? It's just my inability to not drink, right? No matter what, I'm a drink. And then all the consequences that come behind it, whether I'm willing to deal with those or not, or I'm forever trying to manage those consequences, it's really just no way to live. Did I ever want to not drink? I already said no, not until I got in this fellowship. And when I got in this fellowship and I did these steps with my first sponsor, then my second sponsor, and then listening to all you guys in these rooms, I don't want to drink now, right? Mm-hmm. I did have that one thing back in probably about 3 years ago when I found out that anybody ever been to New Orleans? Mm-hmm. Patty O'Brien's, the hurricane drink, right? Oh, yeah. I used to drive over from Pascagoula to New Orleans, and that's about an hour and a half, 2 hour drive, and I'd already be drunk when I get there, and it's probably like 1 or 2 in the morning when I get there, and I'd go straight there because the last time I put that drink in my body, it knocked me out, but I went there every time and it did it to me every time. But about 3 years ago, I found out they're making a hurricane in a punch bowl size, and I thought, I want that. And it's meant to be shared with like 4 to 6 people, but I don't want to share it. I just want it for me, right? But the good thing is I've learned in these rooms with strange thoughts like that run through my mind. I need to tell people, call my sponsor, tell people in the rooms, let people know that thought is running through my head, right? I don't want to try and live with that by myself. In the past, I'm stubborn and I'll figure it out. And besides, New Orleans is 14 hours away. I won't get it anyway, but yeah, I don't want that thought running in my head by myself. So I talk to people about that kind of stuff, right? But when I had that thought, that's when I understood that next line there. We learned to fully concede to our innermost self through alcoholic. I was 5, 6 years sober when that thought came into my head. And I'm like, I'm an alcoholic. I paid it lip service all this time and I thought I meant it. But until I had that thought, you know, and really understood that I really was thinking about, I want that drink. You know, that's when I knew, the innermost self of me knew, I am an alcoholic. I will always be an alcoholic. And if I don't do the things that I need to do on a daily basis, which is pray to the higher power, God, flying spaghetti monster, whatever you want to call it, that I developed a relationship within this fellowship, you know, to talk to other alcoholics, to try and, you know, sponsor other people, to go to the psych centers and the rehabs and the jails. You know, if I don't do all those things to give back as the 12th step tells me to do, you know, then the chances are I may not make it. You know, I sit back and I watch in the rooms and I see the people who stay sober and I see the people who, you know, do other things. And I'm like, I think the difference is the amount, you know, they're invested in the fellowship. And investing in the fellowship means investing in me, right? And vicariously investing in you guys. Mm-hmm. But if I don't do those things, you know, there's a chance that I could go back out drinking, right? And so I know where I was when this ended. You know, I spent the last 5 years of my drinking before I passed out for the last time that night, wanting to die. That was my last thought as I went to bed. When I took the handful of pills that I took from my various medical conditions, with that last drink, which I simply, I didn't need. Trust me, I didn't need it. But I, with that last drink and those pills, and I'm thinking it'd be nice if I didn't wake up in the morning, you know, and I did that for 5 years. So, you know, I'm going to call that incomprehensible demoralization, right? Wanting to die every night, you know, as you go to bed and then waking up in the morning and suffering through the, you know, the terrors and all the other stuff that, you know, occurs every morning. And then just starting all over again, right? Just starting all over again. No real alcoholic ever recovers control. I would have told you I had control. I practiced, you know, but I know now that once I took that first drink, I had no control about how much or how long I was going to drink. And being the selfish and self-centered guy that I am, you know, I manage my money. So I had no money limit on drinking. And I managed my time in the respect that I didn't respect my wife and children enough to come home in time to be a decent father or husband, right? Because it was all about my drinking. I get home when I get home, right? I don't have to live like that anymore. And I know that the only way I can keep from ever, you know, being that way again, because I'm not silly enough to believe that, well, first off, I'm not crazy enough to believe that it'll be fun again. The last 10 years of my drinking, there was no fun in it. You know, I just kept trying to drink more to bring the fun back, but the fun never came back. I was drinking more and more. And it just got more and more miserable, more and more hopeless. And so I just do not believe that after, you know, a period of time that it'll be fun. And if it can't be fun, that just means going back to wanting to die. And I truly believe that, you know, taking a drink, I die spiritually first, right? And this is a guy who used to be an atheist. So I do believe, you know, in God now. So I die spiritually first. And I know that my body follows shortly after that. How long it takes me to physically die, I don't know. But I know this, since drinking and driving were natural to me, the first thing I would do after taking a drink is get behind a wheel. And I may have been lucky for 30 some years doing that, but I'm a gambler a little bit. So I believe in when you speak on your luck, you've ruined it. So if I go out there, luckily, I would only kill myself and nobody else. Thanks for letting me share that.
Thank you. All right. The last two readings are first on page 41 and then on page 43. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come. I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
All right, so I'll make this quick. I wanted to thank the meeting for asking me to come out tonight. It's the way I stay sober is to do actions of helping others, and that's God's will for me today, and that's my solution today. I cannot think through anything. I cannot think through that first drink. I cannot think through anything. That is leaving my life up to me. And I can see, as you have heard tonight, what I get myself into when I follow the direction of self. And those strange mental blank spots, I don't want to have those. I don't want to have that experience again. And the reason how I do that is I pivot, I help others, and I do God's will. And it's nothing that I think is going to do anything really for my recovery. All the thinking, all the managing, all the control that I think I have, is just a big fat lie. That's it. That's all I got tonight. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you. I think a lot of what I just said really covers this stuff here. So I'm gonna say that if you're new, if you've been around a while, read the book. Read the book with a sponsor. Read it to study it. Develop a relationship with a higher power that you can do business with on a daily basis, that you can do business, submit yourself, however you want to look at that. And I sometimes feel awkward saying that last part there, because I spent the majority of my life as an atheist. I just realized in 2012, I realized I wasn't truly atheist. I just didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And so God or wherever it was, stay on his side of the street, I stay on my side of the street. We ain't got to ball with each other. That was a perfect attitude for me to come into AA with, because nobody in AA tried to force any kind of religion or God onto me. They said, find whatever works for you. Right? And if it worked for you, we happy with you. And so that made it easy for me to transition from being atheist to I don't care to believing in something, right? Honestly, the first one I chose, Flying Spaghetti. That's what I chose, the first higher power. And then I transitioned to higher power, honestly, because it's easier to say higher power. And then I went from higher power to God, because it's just easier to say God, right? But I try not to talk, God outside of the rooms, because outside of the rooms, people want automatically assume I'm talking religion. Mm-hmm. And I don't do religion. I still don't do religion, and I have no intention of doing religion. I have no problem with spirituality and the God that I believe in today in the spiritual cause. Now, everything that I've done in the fellowship is, I thought was to not drink, right? But everything I've done, and it tells me in the 12th step, is I've had a spiritual awakening. I've come to change my way I think and to believe in something other than me, because in my world, I was God, right? And I had to, let that kind of thinking go too. So do the steps. Read the book. I promise you, I guarantee you, your life will improve. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Mark.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to pass the basket in accordance with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Sorry.
Okay.
Jill, alcoholic.
Hey, Jill.
Thanks, Jill. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature is available on the table over there. Please ask me or any home group member after the meeting if you would like to purchase a big book. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. If you're a little bit nervous, you can send us an email at info@simpleactions.net. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank Jamie and Mark again, please? After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come up and say thank you to them in person. And Travis has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Hi, my name is Travis. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Travis.
We realize we know all, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Listen to great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
We have a nice way of closing.
Yeah, we do. Being right.
Yeah.
Dancing.
So it's called pasta variant. They're actually weird. Spaghetti comes from me.
Our Father,
Lord heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever. Amen.
Amen. Stay.